Hello, I'm Simon Wakeling, and welcome to this special edition of Six Radio, the show produced for 2MCE on Wiradjuri land by Jane Garner, Casey Garrison, Mary Carroll and myself, all academics in the School of Information and Communication Studies at Charles Sturt University. We've moved to today from our usual slot on the fourth Thursday of the month in recognition of Social Sciences Week, an annual event that celebrates and showcases the diverse range of social sciences, disciplines and research in Australia. The theme of our show today is artificial intelligence, or AI, a rapidly emerging technology that is certain to have, and in fact is already having, a significant impact on our society. AI is a broad term. As a concept, it generally means the capacity for computer systems and programs to perform tasks typically associated with a need for human intelligence. AI has been in the news a great deal recently, primarily because of the emergence of tools like ChatGPT, which perform what is known as generative AI, essentially the use of AI to generate new content, be that text, images, audio, or video. In today's show, you'll hear from three of my colleagues in the School of Information and Communication Studies. They'll explain the work they've been doing related to AI, how it's impacting on the learning and teaching they deliver, and the ways in which AI might change the information and communication professions. To get us started, here's Kay.
Hi, I'm Kay Adoni. I'm a lecturer in the School of Information and Communication Studies. So because I look at teacher librarianship, I deal with schools and school education. My focus with AI has been on doing research and offering professional learning for teacher librarians and educators around the impact of AI in the classroom. But also, I really like the concept of teaching with AI, but also teaching about AI. So not just focusing on using the AI in the lesson or using it to design a lesson, but teaching students about the bigger concepts around AI. So developing their ideas with an understandings about algorithms and building that idea of concepts of data literacy and building their critical literacy skills, because there's so many changes that are going to happen in the information ecosystem as a result of generative AI, and those critical literacy skills and information literacy skills are going to be even more necessary, that I think the teacher librarian has got a really strong position to be able to support teachers and students in teaching about and with AI.
Kay has already begun conducting research in this area.
We've been working on a paper, myself and my colleagues Casey Garrison and Crystal Gaggins-Briggs, and we have been working on looking at three different generative AI tools that are freely available at the moment or at the time of research, and they were Perplexity AI, Quillbot and ChatGPT, and examining ways that teacher librarians might use those tools and the different worldviews that they may bring to those tools and how they may impact the way that they introduce them to teachers and consider their use in the classroom. And so that's what we've been looking at the moment, is comparing those tools and also understanding what their capacities are and how they might be used creatively also to teach about AI, as well as just the use of the tool itself, but using the output of the tools in the teaching process about what they can do and why they might be important.
Lizzie Tate has been working on AI in a couple of different contexts.
Hi, I'm Lizzie Tate and I'm a senior lecturer in the School of Information and Communication Studies. My work related to AI is around two main areas. My first area looks at digital transformation and the impact on information professionals. So I'm really interested in how AI will impact on professional practice both now and into the future, thinking about how that might change the skills and competencies that information professionals need to have. And thinking about how that would then feed through to education and training and how we'll support the development of these professional skills in a really rapidly changing digital environment. So, for example, myself and a couple of colleagues have been looking at the course provision among some of the courses teaching information studies around Australia, the UK, and we're just recently starting in Canada and the US as well, looking at how and if AI and digital literacy more generally is integrated into courses, and perhaps where there's room for that to change in future. We've also been looking at the responses from the professional associations to these new changes and how these have been slightly different, certainly in terms of the UK and Australia. In addition to that, I'm also working on a project that's just quite recently started, which is a big digital transformation project looking at our rural development project, specifically around things like agriculture, aquaculture, and energy. And my role in that is looking at the model development side of things. So looking at how models that will be used for digital tools, including AI, can be developed in a way that is are robust, reliable, and also ethical.
Lizzie there mentioned AI content in higher education courses. The use of AI in teaching can be complex, as universities and other education organisations have been scrambling to introduce policies to maintain academic integrity, or to put it more simply, to stop students using AI to cheat. Travis explains how he's incorporated AI into his teaching.
My name is Travis Holland. I'm a senior lecturer in communication in the School of Information and Communication Studies. So, in my subject, Introduction to the Digital Society, I asked students to think about how they could incorporate AI in a bunch of different activities and even the assessment tasks. The university policy specifies that students can't use AI unless they've been specifically given permission to do so. And so I did draft that into our policies, and I made sure that students were specifically told they could go ahead and use AI. And I think that's really important because that acknowledgement and that conscious approach to using these technologies is going to be really important. And a lot of the emerging guidelines seem to be around ensuring there's recognition and acknowledgement of when generative AI is being used in a particular media output. So, for example, Adobe Firefly, which is a kind of generative AI tool produced by Adobe, actually has a note on any produced images that says this is produced by Adobe Firefly, so that no one's under any illusions as to where something's originated. So what I did with the students last year was we came up to a week called Cyberpunk, where we were looking at cyberpunk theory, and I asked them to think about AI and generate cyberpunk images because those image generation tools are best when they use a particular theme or idea, something that's very got a very distinctive aesthetic. And so the students generated a whole bunch of cyberpunk images. They were doing streetcars and animals with cyberpunk enhancements and all sorts of stuff that was really cool. And that was just about experimenting and playing with it. And then the other way that we used it was the students scripted their own podcasts, but then we went ahead and used AI-generated voices to produce some of the pieces, particularly where those pieces were, programs or voicing programs or those kinds of things. So starting to incorporate the technology into learning and teaching in an authentic way and in a way that our industry is doing it, I think is increasingly important, and that's what we've been doing already.
AI-generated voices can sound like this.
Or alternatively, like this.
Or indeed, like this.
Or like this! Just kidding, that was me. So what are the implications of AI for the professions that our contributors are training students to enter? Here's Kay.
I think that it's going to potentially bring a whole new arm of support that teacher librarians can provide to teachers and to students, because teacher librarians have that knowledge of the curriculum and knowledge of pedagogy, but they also have the knowledge of information management. And so they can combine those together to provide better understandings of how we might need to redesign learning activities and assessment tasks to support students who currently might be asked to complete tasks that are easily now done through using generative AI. So for many years, TLs have been proponents of inquiry learning and of learning that is based on information literacy and research processes. And I think that we might see a little bit more of a resurgence of that, because although there'll always be a place for direct teaching, there's a lot less scope for straight up essays where students just respond with information that they've found. That's just too easily replicated now with generative AI. And so also I think that TLs will be able to enhance the opportunities that they have to model information literacy and scaffold development of information literacy for students and teachers, because there's a lot of different areas I think that currently teachers are carrying the load, but with AI developing in the way that it is, it's going to be too much for teachers to take on by themselves, and they're going to need that support of the teacher librarian to be able to develop learning and teaching opportunities that really develop new skills for students.
Lizzie anticipates some potentially significant implications for the libraries and archives professions.
I think at the moment, the big implications are around the conversations that are being generated about this topic. And really interesting thing to me is hearing about what the professions think themselves are going to be the impact on AI. And those vary from being very excited about the potential for new areas of work to being really worried about things like deprofessionalization, about roles being taken away and you know, potentially losing large parts of the industry. And as ever with these things, the truth will be somewhere in between and also different from how we might expect. I could see AI becoming much more seamlessly integrated into the work in ways that we maybe don't even realize it's there. I think there's tremendous potential for contributing significantly to conversations around ethics in particular, and around ethical use and appropriate use of AI. So I think as a profession, once we get over the initial kind of shock and speculation around AI, we will be moving more towards seeing how it can be integrated with our other work, specifically around digital literacy and algorithmic literacy and ethics. I know specific examples in archiving, for example, where AI tools are being used to interrogate data sets that have maybe been previously inaccessible or not very well catalogued in the past, and that there's some success there with looking at how it can be used for evaluation purposes and for getting more out of collections than perhaps was previously possible. But as with a lot of these things, they're kind of at the earlier stages, and so you can see more of the potential for how things could be in future rather than perhaps on how they're working right now.
So what about the impact on the communication professions? Here's Travis.
There's a real challenge there because I think, you know, generative AI is vaguely a passable writer, drawer, designer, drafter in lots of different fields. And so what we think of the communication industries, which is, you know, dozens of different professions, everything from journalist and reporter of various kinds to podcast producer and graphic designer and all sorts of different roles, as well as people producing social media. It already is pretty good, these tools, at generating stuff that's formulaic. So perhaps the real problem there is that too many people are producing this content in a way that is formulaic, and they're relying on templated approaches rather than already using the creativity that humans can use. But I think what we're going to see is very much more people working hand in hand to enhance their own skills and to bring the creativity as the kind of spark to set up a shape and then fill in patches of that work with AI. So to go back to the generative image examples, there's no market out there at all for an image generated entirely by prompt. But there is a market out there for images enhanced by prompts, for background shifts, for editing that's done on the fly much more quickly. And that's really just a productivity enhancer for designers and whatnot. We already have the situation where recommendation engines are in play. Tools like Canva, you can upload an image and it'll pull out a template that matches the style and color of that image into the type of design you want to produce. In terms of what I think we're going to start to see is the kinds of things we are seeing. So I use a tool called Riverside FM to record my podcasts. And That tool has now an AI-generated auto clips feature. So it pulls clips of 30 to 90 seconds that are quite interesting, usually clips that are focused on a particular topic or whatever, and it downloads them as clips, which you can then share on social media. Now that saves hours and hours of editing time. It's brilliant. If you're a professional podcast producer who produces for clients, for example, and our students are kind of going into those roles, then you can take that, save time, and pick up a whole another client. So it actually is adding quite a bit of value to the workflow. I don't think we're going to see a situation where all the jobs in any given industry are suddenly replaced by AI. What I think we're going to see is people working hand in hand with these tools, and having the actual skills to use them well in a particular industry is going to be sought after knowledge in and of itself. And that's one of the reasons I said straight away, let's get it in front of the students and see what they can produce with it in a safe environment. You know, university is here to allow students to fail in a safe way, and to experiment and learn things in a safe way, in my view, before they're kind of out there getting paid to do those jobs.
Of course, it's not just AI that is changing the communication landscape.
Already we've seen, you know, news organisations are cutting thousands of journalists across the country. That was happening well in advance of generative AI technology. That was happening due to revenue collapse and whatnot. But those same news organisations now are producing formulaic stories about local weather and local sport using AI. And so there was a national publisher the last few weeks who announced it was kind of generating somewhere in the order of 3,000 stories a week using generative AI. Now, there were some people who then followed up and checked the quality of those stories, and they weren't great. But what they have actually done is put people in place to oversee the output of the stories, to check how it's going. And because it is bringing additional ad revenue, it then supports additional investment in journalists. Now, that's the ideal. You know, we can argue what the corporations are actually doing, but if that kind of model starts to work for what is formulaic journalism, then you can still use humans to, you know, produce investigative journalism or whatever it happens to be. And even in those roles, you can work hand in hand with the AI tools to pick out interesting patterns or irregularities in company audits, for example, and that might uncover some interesting story that we might not have been able to pick out as humans just combing through that data, or at least not efficiently. So I'm leaning towards optimistic, certainly in terms of its impact on the communication industries. And even if your view is not optimistic, and the argument might be that, well, this stuff's just going to get better and better, I don't know what the alternative is actually. Do you just throw up your hands and say, well, we're not going to teach our students how to use it and hope it goes away? Like, that's not going to happen. Lots of industries tried that when the internet came along 30 years ago, and look where that's got them.
Kay Adone expands on this intersection between AI and other developments and changes to professional practice.
There was already a lot of changes that were needed in the education system in terms of how we teach and what we teach, and generative AI has just really brought that even more so into the spotlight because, you know, students have been researching using the internet for the last 10, 15 years, but how effectively they do that and how accurately and effectively they are able to search online and locate the best source of information, the most credible source of information. You know, that's been a real source of concern for a long time. And now that we've now got this tool that gives the actual answer in a conversational style or in a style that they could well use themselves in their writing, just brings even more under the microscope. They need to rethink assessment strategies and rethink tasks for students. I've been interviewing teacher librarians about information literacy and how that's changed over time. And almost every single TL said, when you give a student a task, they'll type the task in word for word into Google, and then they will get the top response, and they won't even open the top response. Most of the time, they'll just take whatever the sentence or two is in the little blurb in the top 10 answers and use that, and not even open the website itself. If that's how students are researching, and if that's how students are finding information that they're then using to pass assessment tasks, There's something fundamentally wrong there. So to suddenly block ChatGPT and say, this will stop any problems with the quality of assessment responses is just fooling ourselves. So I think we always needed to have a fairly substantial rethink about the way that we teach students information literacy skills and research skills, and how we frame tasks and what we actually want students to know and be able to do, rather than just continue the same tasks that we've been using for the past 30 or 40 years, pretending that everything around them hasn't changed. That just isn't working anymore, and it hasn't worked for a long time, but maybe this might be an impetus for change.
Lizzie explains that AI is already impacting learning activities in the classroom.
I've also heard from colleagues that it's also AI and generative AI are transforming how their in-classroom interactions are working, because a colleague observed that, for example, when he gave students a tutorial task, which would normally involve people sitting in groups and having a discussion and that sort of thing, a lot of the time he was noticing that instantly students were going to ChatGPT and typing in the tutorial task, and then using that as a, you'd hope using that as a basis for their discussion, but often seeing that as the answer to the particular question or topic that was looking to be discussed. And so what they were seeking to do was not, as we've been saying, to ban AI or the use of it or ChatGPT, et cetera, in the tutorial context, but to discuss how these can be integrated in a way that maintains the discussion's interest points, that means students are applying their critical thinking skills, and also so that they recognise the limitations of these tools.
Some commentators have argued that the emergence of generative AI means we need to rethink not just how we teach and assess students, but what we teach them. Kay suggests that a considered response is required.
I think that what we need to do is look at what we always have taught and ask, why did we teach it and what was the point of teaching it? Was it so that the person or the student learnt the content? Was it that the student had to do a particular style of thinking or had to apply a particular approach and build that skill rather than the content? Was it the way that the student was responding and expressing their understanding? Was that the task's goal? You know, is it to learn how to write an essay? Is it to learn how to formulate a report or to get up and speak in front of somebody and present some persuasive speech? Is that, what exactly is it that we want the student to get out of the learning? And then work out, yes, ChatGPT can do some of those things, but are there other ways that we can teach those skills? Do they still need those skills? Because we do need certain base content to be able to, you know, apply to different things and solve problems. But for the most part, the content's the accessible part. It's about the skills that we want the students to be able to build. And so I think it's about examining the deeper reasonings as to what we're teaching and why, and then deciding from there what we now need to teach and why.
Lizzie expands on this.
I think there's always going to be a case to be made that that people need to get a depth of understanding around a particular topic or practice or you know, aspect like this. So there's some course and fundamental skills that people do need to have in order to have that foundational knowledge so that they understand what it is that they're looking at. So I'm thinking, for example, there's been lots of developments in assistive tools for statistics and for data analysis. And some of those will obviously include AI, but people still need to be able to know what they're applying in the right context and to be able to interpret the results correctly. Otherwise, you end up with a situation where there's misinformation or a misunderstanding of certain outputs. So you can use then the teaching of AI to build onto that and also then to see what the limitations are and to also have that sort of critical perspective and ethical perspective as well on these tools.
To end the show, I asked our contributors what they thought were the main takeaways from this discussion for listeners. Here's Travis.
I think the main thing for anybody to do when a new technology comes along and kind of sweeps the cultural zeitgeist is to try and use it and see how they think it can actually be applied or used in whatever their field or their interest happens to be. So, you know, it's free to jump on to ChatGPT and and put in a prompt and see what it comes up with, and just have a play. It's free at the moment to use Adobe Firefly, and it's within a browser. All you need is any given photo you can upload and see how that edits. So personally, my single takeaway for people would be, if you want to understand a technology, the best thing to do is use it, experiment, play. Don't approach it with a particular goal in mind. That's why I like to say the word play. Just go in there and see what it can do. And then you'll have a greater understanding, rather than sitting back and judging or not taking the time to understand what the conversation's actually about.
Lizzie too encourages curiosity, but also suggests some reasons to be cautious.
I think that in terms of people thinking about their jobs, or in terms of some of their other pastimes, say, for example, something to bear in mind is thinking about which aspects of AI it is that they will be really of most value to them to understand. So, for example, when I was speaking to some people at a library conference a couple of weeks ago, they were talking about actual algorithm development and the mathematical sides of things, and saying, are we going to need to learn to do all of this? And the answer is, well, no, you're not going to need to learn to do every single bit of the pipeline of AI, or learn highly technical skills. But there will be aspects of this that it is in your interest to learn about, and certainly have at least a curiosity and an interest in what those technologies are. But another thing that I would say would be, while embracing a culture of curiosity, to also be a little bit cautious as well with some of the tools, because we have seen, for example, people putting a lot of their personal photos or other pieces of work into some of these AI tools without fully understanding the user agreements and what might happen to the data as a result of that, which is resulting in perhaps people's images being reused or them giving over copyright, for example. So I think people do have to be just a little bit careful in terms of the data privacy and in terms of the personal information that they're handing over.
Kay has an important caveat to this discussion. Watch out for experts.
At least in terms of school education, but in terms of a lot of other things as well, when it comes to AI, I think there are very, very few experts out there who know everything about it, and even fewer people who know where it's all going and how it's all going to pan out in the end, and whether we're going to end up having AI that can, you know, run the world for us, or whether it's just going to make, you know, stay in terms of a tool that's very much under our control. No one can predict those things at this point. So if you come across someone who is speaking extremely authoritatively about the topic and making very firm statements one way or the other, especially from my experience in terms of education and what's going to happen in schools and what teachers are or aren't doing, or what's going to happen with students, I would say just treat that with a little bit of a grain of salt and apply your own critical literacy skills, because really I don't believe that there's very many people at all out there who really have that much of an in-depth grasp, because it's all so new and it's changing so quickly. And I always am nervous when I hear people speaking definitively on a topic like this about the outcomes or the impacts. We can all have conjecture and we can have informed opinions, but that would be where I would stand on conversations that happen on social media and other places.
Travis suggests another reason to be wary of some of the people talking about AI at the moment.
I think the people that often speak the longest and loudest about this technology or any technology are often those that have something to gain from its widespread use and implementation. A lot of technologists, particularly in a certain region of the world that can remain nameless, unnamed for now, have a very rent-seeking approach where their view is just get my technology into as many fields as possible, into as many applications as possible, into as many other websites and pieces of physical devices or whatever it happens to be as possible. And then eventually, once we've collected everyone's data, we'll figure out a way to make money from it. And that certainly does seem to be what's happening, certainly with something like ChatGPT. It's just being incorporated into a whole bunch of existing tools and technologies. And so while I certainly encourage people to play with it, it's absolutely right that you need to be cautious about what information you put in there, because you don't want to be giving too much away. But for the most part, those with something to gain should be approached with a certain healthy sense of skepticism when they're pronouncing what the future's going to be.
That's all we have time for, I'm afraid. Many thanks to our three contributors, Travis Holland, Kay Adone, and Lizzie Tate. We'll be back on 2MCE in our usual slot on the fourth Thursday of September, when we'll be bringing you a show about how libraries are serving the LGBTQI+ communities. So until then, happy borrowing.